So I'll be talking today about understanding implementation, experiences of community-based organizations using innovative technologies for prevention with positives. I have nothing to disclose. So there's a problem in that there's a need to expand access to effective behavioral interventions for people who are living with HIV. One example is the Healthy Relationships Program, which is an effective behavioral intervention. It's only offered in person and only in select communities throughout the U.S. And why is that? Well, it's a group-based program, so it requires that a core group of people or a significant number of people can come together at one time to benefit from the program. It also requires two trained facilitators, and often you have to send someone out of state to get that training, so there's substantial costs. It's four-day training, sometimes 5 days of travel. And then it's 5 2-hour sessions, so that's a lot of resources required to offer the program. And that might be fine in more high-resource areas and higher prevalence areas, but in lower prevalence areas and more, which are often more rural and remote, this is very tricky to pull this off. So what happens is that people just don't have access to this type of program. So a potential solution is to deliver healthy relationships via video groups, and by this I mean group-based video conferencing. So that's a potential solution, but we don't know how it's going to work yet. So we started off with some focus groups with 28 women living with HIV in the Tampa Bay area. We talked with them about this and said, what do you think? You know, would you do this? And most women said they'd be willing to try video groups, although they did say that privacy and confidentiality would be key. Most interesting, I think, was we talked about doing this over a computer with a webcam, or we talked about using specialized video phones, which I'll show you in a moment. And I would have put money down that they would have preferred computers because computers are familiar. Absolutely not. They said video phones, they look more like telephones. They seem like they would be secure. Computers are associated with hacking, with privacy and confidentiality breaches, but the video phones are safe. We also learned that home really wasn't an option. A lot of these women don't have computers at home. They certainly don't have video phones at home. And even if they did, there's issues about privacy and confidentiality with the other people who are living in their homes. So here you can see a picture of a video phone. They work like group-based video conferencing, so all participants and the facilitators can see and hear one another, and it's synchronous. Each woman accesses the group from a separate video phone. It's located in a private room that's critical, and this is what we call a community intervention station. So most of the community settings that we've put this in have been aid service organizations or health department clinics. We're not talking about people's homes. I talked about why. Also with this program, the facilitators are centralized, and so that's an advantage because we only need to train one or two sets of facilitators, and we also can make sure that they're trained, they're supervised, they're retrained if needed, so there's more control over the quality. This shows you a picture of the community intervention station. You can see the video phone, chair, pretty basic. And then you can see the facilitator station, which we've set up in an academic office. So key players in this are agency administrators. And we're talking about executive directors or employees who have leadership positions within these organizations. It's important that they be champions for the partnership. And their role is really to oversee what I say study operations, but I really, it's study and program operations related to the video groups. Also key are site liaisons. So we couldn't just set this up in these organizations and hope that, you know, our participants would figure out how to access everything and show up on time and, you know, and press the right buttons. So we had to have somebody who could act as an intervention host or hostess. At our sites, we had one volunteer who had this role, and then primarily employees of the organizations. Their job was to handle the day-to-day details of implementation at their site. So this involves setting up the equipment, which is the video phone, and then we use computers for the research-based assessment, so they had to deal with that. Their job was to greet and set up the participants in front of the equipment. We asked them to work nearby, so if there were any technological or psychological crises that came up, there was somebody there who could help to deal with that. We also asked them to connect to an instant messenger so that they could communicate with our facilitation team and also with the other sites and our technical support folks. So if any issues came up, they could be in communication and get resolved quickly. And then we asked them to distribute incentives for mostly the research part of this. We did a single group pilot test and found that participants did enjoy the video groups, and this was even though they didn't have much experience with computers and really no experience with group-based video conferencing. They liked that video groups were incompatible with side conversations and felt that they could actually focus more in this type of group than in person. So we received an R34 grant from NIMH for what we call the HERS study to determine the feasibility, acceptability, and preliminary effectiveness of video group delivery of healthy relationships, which was then a DEBI, which is now part of the High Impact Prevention Program. And we focused on females only at this point, simply because the intervention needs and even, you know, particularities of where this might work and how this might work could differ based on gender and risk group. So research questions for the present analysis were, what were the experiences of community-based organizations that helped implement the Healthy Relationships video group? So what implementation challenges did they face, and what were the benefits to the CBOs? We did 14 individual structured interviews with administrators and site liaisons. All of our six community sites participated, and this was 10 months into our implementation. We had an independent interviewer so that we weren't biasing it by, you know, talking to them as part of the study team, and then we used and applied thematic analysis. I'm not going to get into the details of this slide too much, although we can talk about it later. This just shows you that we had a number of configurations in terms of how the sites were set up. So we had two sites that shared an administrator because there was an umbrella organization that oversaw both sites. We had one site where the administrator and the liaison were the same person, and then we had other sites with multiple liaisons. So that's how we got to 14. So I just want to briefly mention some research-specific challenges. The participants or the respondents talked about how some of the participants required basic computer orientation for assessment completion, and that was unfortunate from their perspective at the sites because it was one more thing they had to do. They had to show them how to use the mouse, how to use the computer. They also didn't like that the incentive system was a bit inefficient and chaotic initially. To help the organizations, we bought the incentives and then got them to the sites, but then we had this crazy system, of course, that was required by the university for how to track them, and that was complicated. They didn't like it. So I'm not going to focus on the research challenges because the session is about practice, and so we'll talk more about the practice or program-specific challenges. One of the most interesting findings, I think, is a non-finding, if you will, that these program-specific challenges weren't about the technology. So there was only one person, of all these 14 interviews, only one person mentioned a technology issue related to the video phone, and that was that she just kept getting confused about whether to plug in the internet first or the phone. That simple. She was the only one. Otherwise, they talked about challenges of integrating the liaison duties into existing roles at the organizations. They talked about the challenges of the instant messaging system, turnover and related training needs, and the schedule being too complicated. And I'll talk a little bit more about each one. So one of the administrators told us, because you're not going to schedule 15 intakes while the HERS study client is in there. So you change all of that. Tuesdays and Thursdays, you may not have any intakes during the time frame that our HERS study participant is here. So obviously this was a bit of an imposition on the sites, and it was challenging for them to figure out how to deal with that at times. The instant messaging system, again, we conceive this as a nice way to keep communication open with the sites, but one problem from the site perspectives was that this limited multitasking. They had a lot of other things they needed to do, and this required that they sit down in front of a computer and monitor instant messaging. We also had a few sites where there were issues with firewalls. So they said, you know, you can't just walk away and do something else. You can do things at the computer, but that's limiting. Another issue that we didn't well anticipate was turnover and related training needs. And so this came up several times. One woman said, I think they did some training. They had to do it for them, the previous liaisons at my site, to know what they know. And the interviewer said, but you didn't get that training, right? No, what I learned from those two young ladies, the previous liaisons. And there was some discontent with that. They felt a little cheated that they didn't get that. So sometimes we as researchers complicate things. And I am guilty of that. We had this amazing schedule that that set it up so that we had 1 month we would have groups on Tuesday morning, and anybody who came on Tuesday morning always came on Tuesday or Thursday morning, and then, you know, another month we would have it in Tuesday or Thursday afternoon, then we'd move to Wednesday so that we could accommodate all these schedules of our participants, but we didn't accommodate the schedules of the sites very well. So they didn't like that very much. And in fact, what happened, and this quote illustrates, the liaisons, either they never saw the master schedule or they never understood the master schedule. Okay, so we learned, keep it simple, stupid. I just want to briefly mention, we had a couple negative cases, really one site that had two specific issues. At this site, there was poor leadership, and so the liaisons didn't really know that they were going to be liaisons until our personnel showed up to train them. And so that was a sign to us that maybe we need to communicate with our sites about how to communicate with their staff and work with their staff around this role. Also, that same site was not an HIV-specific agency. This was under the umbrella of a larger organization, and this happened to be a weatherization project. I still don't know what that is, but I know it's not HIV related. So they talked about, you know, having people come in and, you know, and they're talking about sex and they can sort of hear them through the walls and it's disruptive and they're uncomfortable. So it's clear that while it could work in these settings, we maybe need to do a little bit more in terms of preparing the staff there. I want to talk briefly about the benefits, too, to the organizations. Our respondents talked about participant empowerment and support. The liaisons receive personal satisfaction from the experience of helping others in this way. And then, unsurprisingly, the administrators were talking about the benefits to the agency in terms of service expansion and other opportunities, particularly for receiving other funding because of the affiliation with the university. So one liaison said, we actually had one client come in last month who felt like she just claimed her life back because of her study. It was really good to see. Another said, I feel good because I'm helping other women. Where I was in their footsteps at one time, this was our HIV positive volunteer, she said, I didn't have that help and I'm able to help them. So it meant a lot to her personally to be involved. And then the administrators, as I said, talked about the agency benefits. The experience that I've had has been one of thinking in terms of forging relationships in order to provide better service. Once we partner with another agency, such as a huge agency like USF, that means we can serve more people. So in summary, several challenges were identified, and most likely these can be addressed by simplifying or changing some of our processes, rethinking the way we do the communication, having more trainings, maybe putting the trainings online, and then also helping partnering agencies to anticipate integration challenges and really think about how they're going to talk with staff or select staff. Ideally, they would ask staff who wants to be involved, but we know that's not always how things work in these organizations. The benefits are certainly for the participants or clients of these agencies, as well as for the agencies more broadly. We certainly had a small number of people to interview. We did have some site liaison attrition, and we weren't able to contact those liaisons who didn't stay. It's also interesting when you do this kind of hybrid design where it's research and implementation to try to tease out what are the research challenges, what are the implementation challenges. So this work is certainly consistent with other research in the community-based research arena. Findings support the feasibility and acceptability of video group delivery of prevention with positives from a community-based organization perspective. Clearly, a successful partnership involves continuous negotiation, and figuring out how to make this work will involve a lot more communication with our sites to come up with the best practices. And further studies should really explore this approach with other populations because it seems promising. So I want to acknowledge the grant and all the fabulous people who helped make this possible. And there's my contact information. Thank you. Yes?
Have you thought about doing this with men? And if so, how do you expect that to be different with men?
Well, we have an IMHR01 application under review right now, so we're hoping they will fund us to expand this work to men and also to Spanish-speaking men and women. We've been doing some surveys with men to see, you know, what are their thoughts about this. Again, do they seem to feel the same way that, sure, this sounds like a good idea, and in general they do. They're a little bit more likely to say that they might want to do this at home, but they don't have home computers, and they're still concerned about some of the privacy and confidentiality risks associated with that. So I'm confident that it should work. It's interesting because usually when I present on this, you know, people say, but why not do it at home? Home would be so great. It would eliminate the transportation barriers. And I think maybe that's people who, I don't know, who work in bigger cities where maybe, and particularly with more affluent gay men who may have access to the internet at home and be able to do that and less concerned about stigma. But certainly with the folks that we've been working with, I think it's really important to honor that privacy and confidentiality and see how this approach will work.
I feel like it could be an issue at home if the people they live with don't know their agency.
Exactly.
And that could be a little bit of a barrier.
That is the main issue with at home. And maybe gay men are more likely to disclose to their partners or roommates or family at home. I don't know that literature terribly well, but at any rate, it still seems to be an issue from what they're telling us. There's still concerns about home, so we're going to try it out as long as we get money to do it. Yes, sir? Yes. The AIDS and behaviors from the focus group data, and then the AIDS care paper is from a single group pilot test we did, and our main findings from the trial, which are the main outcome of sexual risk reduction, are coming out in telemedicine and e-health. There's a lot of debate about whether or not healthy relationships is a disclosure intervention. There's certainly a fair amount of talk about disclosure in the intervention. It was not one of the main outcomes in Seth Kalichman's trial, and thus not one of the main outcomes in our trial. And it's a very tricky outcome because what healthy relationships does is encourage people to make good decisions about disclosure, but not exactly encourage people to disclose. So it's hard to measure. And we've assessed that a little bit. We haven't really looked at the outcomes very much. But it's tricky because disclosing isn't always the right outcome. That's a good question.
That's a really great way of basically exchanging information. But what you have you thought about the cost effectiveness of this and the applications and what settings you see just being applied as the cost effectiveness of the organization?
Absolutely. So the cost effectiveness piece is part of the R01 application. So we're hoping we'll have some data on that in the next 5 or 6 years. And we've brought on some more for this next grant. We have community health centers coming on board. So we're going to look at what it's like. But we only have a total of 10 sites. We would need a lot more than R01 funding to do the kind of work that would really tell us what type of site is the best site. But we'd love to do that. Lori, did you?
I know that there have been some studies that use just phone
Great question. So I have a colleague, Rob Glukoff, and he's the guy who I knew did video conferencing work in the past, and I called him up and said, can we do this? And he, of course, was the one who said, why don't you just do it on the telephone? And really healthy relationships is all about watching videos and role plays, and so for healthy relationships, I don't think it would work very well. This is my thought, and I don't know if it's true. I think it helps the women a lot to see the other women and get those head nods and that confirmation that they're being heard. I think it would be hard for these women to do this over a telephone. I'll be quick because I know I'm past time, but I have to tell you this because I love this. One of the coolest things that happened in the course of our study was that we had early on, you know, heard complaints of, well, if you do this, you're not going to be able to, like, hug people or, you know, touch them to let them know that you support them and, you know, that you feel for them. And so in the course of one of these groups, the women came up with a virtual hug. And so they, you know, the screen only shows so much of the head, but they figured out that this could show up on the screen, and this was the symbol for hug. And that meant so much to them, to be able to just show the other women when they were expressing themselves and talking about something particularly difficult that I support you, I'm with you, and you wouldn't get that on the phone. Thank you.